Hi, I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for joining me. It's time to head out on the wine road. Each year, Wine and Spirits magazine tastes over 15,000 wines as they compile the list of brands they tout as some of the best by varietal and price, presented in the second half of each issue. As they taste throughout the year, they're also compiling their list of the top 100 wineries across the globe. That culminates with an extraordinary evening in October as all 100 wineries attend the Top 100 Tasting Event. It is such a pleasure to taste some of the best and most unique wines in the world, a good number of which are made in Northern California. That provides easy access for me to reach out to these local Top 100 winemakers and share their story. One guy I met at last year's tasting was Eric Sussman of Radio Coteau in western Sonoma County. This coming Tuesday will be his third appearance at the Top 100. He's a soft-spoken guy and a hard one to track down, but nearly a year later I was able to do so. I said to Eric, having such a great list of vineyards to pick and choose from must give you greater flexibility in how you craft the wines in your portfolio.
Yeah, it's been a great way to get started, and also gives us some diversity in terms of the vintages, and some areas perform better in certain years than others, and so having the diversification in different appellations and different microclimates helps to mitigate some of the risk.
Tell me a little bit about some of the vineyards you source from that provide the inspiration that eventually ends up in the bottle.
Yeah, we've been, you know, since 2002, been focused on western Sonoma County and Anderson Valley. Up in Anderson Valley, we've been working with the Savoy Vineyard, both on Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and that's pretty much the only vineyard up north. And then the remainder of the vineyards down here in western Sonoma County have been great opportunities to learn about, coastal sites and working with some great growers in the area, both Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Syrah.
Of the five varietals you work with, I noticed the Savoy is the only one that you share with more than one variety, so you have quite a few, a long list of different vineyards you work with.
Yeah, you know, there's it's great to have the collaboration with the growers and other wineries on sites. Folks have different styles that can be expressed from the site, and ultimately it's the vineyard that dictates the personality of the wine. The picking decision is pretty critical. More recently, we're kind of on the earlier side of things. It's the heat that can often, I wouldn't say wash out a vintage, but can kind of almost cook a vintage, if you will. Way back when, as people were kind of scared of the rains, and now we're kind of trying to beat the heat, if you will.
So. We had the whole gamut here within just a few weeks of a little bit of rain, high spike temperatures, cooler temperatures. It's been quite a roller coaster ride lately.
Yeah, it's, every year is different, and this year has been really compressed. I think we basically harvested all our fruit in half the time that we usually do. We started 2 weeks later than last year, and we not quite finished yet, but we were, about 2 weeks ahead of the finish line this year as compared to last year. And, it's a lot of it has to do with, the vineyard management during the season and how it was poised to weather the climatic challenges. We experienced some pretty intense heat, and then we, like you said, had some wet conditions. So it's kind of been a, kind of touch and go this season.
Have you seen a variance in the yields from the different vineyards from Mendocino as far south as near the Petaluma Gap? Or are they all kind of similar?
Everyone, I don't know, a lot of people were expecting pretty higher yields this year with all the precipitation we had in the winter. Full canopies, pretty good fruit set. But all said and done, the yields were not as high as people had expected. Out on the extreme Sonoma coast, they were kind of lighter, which is pretty normal given the flowering and bloom conditions out there. But I'd say all in all, it was probably, average yields, which is good for the finer wine segment of the market here.
It's apparent that the vineyards you choose are very important because you have a non-interventionist approach in the cellar. And so the end result displayed represents the attributes of the vineyard. And if you have excellent grapes, you're going to have some very nice wine.
Yeah, and we focus on the raw materials and really try to embrace the natural process of wine growing. The Burgundians have this saying, you know, the hardest thing to do is nothing at all. And it's when you have really great raw materials, the fermentation kind of runs its course and there's no additions, no manipulations. And at the end of the day, that wine is a real true and pure expression of place and time. And that's what we embrace here at Rey de Coteau.
And you prefer organic vineyards or biodynamic?
Yeah, once again, I mean, you know, both in the cellar and in the vineyard, we're believers in organic and biodynamic farming and non-interventional winemaking. You know, farming, it takes a lot of inputs and efforts, but being gentle on the earth and not only for the sake of the earth, but also the folks working in the field is really important to us. So we really want to have a healthy environment both in the vineyard and in the cellar, and we feel that translates to the wine's personality.
And while we're on the topic of farming, you have quite a garden here on the property. Aside from the vineyards, you've got all kinds of vegetables and fruit out there, and animals too.
Yeah, no, we have a really amazing team here at Rey de Coteau, and it's a group effort, and the diversification into other farming pursuits has been a great exercise and just learning, you know, how to grow food. And it's a pretty humbling experience. At the home ranch here, we're at 800 feet. It's close to the coast, but in a kind of banana belt area, so we can grow all kinds of crops. We've got a long growing season. We like to have nice harvest meals during this busy season, and everyone who works at Rey de Coteau gets to enjoy the vegetables and the fruits of their labor. And we also have been offering some of this wonderful produce to some local restaurants, which has been a lot of fun.
I'm sure there are quite a few that'd be happy to take it off your hands, huh? Tell us how you came up with the name Rey de Coteau.
Yeah, I spent a couple of years in France, and this was back in 95 and 96. And while living and working in France, I was in this school in Burgundy, and a friend of mine who is French and is from the Rhone Valley, his name is Fabien Bergeron, and he had this expression, Rey de Coteau, which it loosely translates to word of mouth. Radio in French means to broadcast, and a coteau is a hillside. But the literal translation, this broadcasting of the hillside, is, you know, our raison d'etre. It's kind of who we are in terms of having this sense of place, and the wines that are kind of, you know, broadcasting this sense of place, and that's the kind of the essence of the meaning.
Should we venture up to a hillside and scream, drink Rey de Coteau?
That's a good idea. Yeah, we could try that.
You got quite an education early on in viticulture, starting with viticulture, and then that led you into winemaking. Tell us a little bit about all the different places you had a chance to work.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in New York and wasn't really raised around wine, but went to school up at Cornell and was in the ag school, and started to learn about wine and viticulture, and studied organic viticulture in upstate New York. And after leaving Cornell, I went out to the Yakima Valley in eastern Washington and worked there for 4 years and learned about winemaking and also organic farming in eastern Washington, and then went to France for a couple of years. And 95, I was in Bordeaux, did some apprenticeships at Mouton Rothschild and Claire Milon, and then moved over to Burgundy in 96, and was mainly situated at Cantarmont and Pamar, and also did some time at Jacques Prieur and Meursault. Then coming back to the States in 1997, I spent a year at Bonny Doon, which was a pretty dynamic experience, and then moved up to Sebastopol in 98 and spent 4 years at Dalinger Winery, and really got situated in Sebastopol in western Sonoma County, and then in 2002 launched Rey de Coteau.
Of all those places, what do you think you learned the most that you're still applying to this day?
Yeah, you know, I often tell people that, you know, Rey de Coteau is old world technique and new world fruit. So there's a lot of great potential here in western Sonoma County and also up in Anderson Valley, and for that matter, all over the north coast of California. I mean, that's kind of where we're focused. But, you know, we embrace the old world techniques, this non-interventional winemaking approach, but it's the new world, and we're not Burgundy, we're Western Sonoma County, and that's what we really try to capture. So, traditional winemaking practices with an appreciation for what the new world has to offer is kind of our focus.
We mentioned the weather earlier, but thankfully we don't have to deal with the hail and the frost that Bordeaux and Burgundy have to deal with.
Yeah, the weather is, it's a wild card, and it really keeps us on our toes. So being aware of the changes in the climate are really important in terms of making fine wine.
I mentioned Wine and Spirits magazine earlier, and once again, you've landed on the top 100 list that they feel are the best wineries in the world. And that's not the first time, is it?
It's actually, yeah, it's the third time, 3 years in a row. It's a great honor, and we're grateful for the opportunity to be amongst this group of producers, and look forward to the tasting coming up in a couple weeks.
You must be proud, but does that give you a sense of validation, or do you even need that?
Oh, it all helps. The wine. The wine world isn't all romance. It's a lot of hard work, and so it's nice to get an accolade to keep us all going. We've got a really amazing team here at Radio Coteau, and it's a tribute to our staff as well.
I think I have the most romantic job of all, in this industry, because I get to go out and meet you guys and hang out with you, see what you're doing, and taste the product, but I don't have to do the labor.
Yeah. Lucky you.
Before I let you go, we should talk a little bit more about this old historic property that we're sitting on, this old porch here, and this goes back to 1906.
It's even earlier than 1892. There was a lot of Italian immigrants that came to the Occidental area, and they were logging, and also planted some Zin vines, and so we've got a block dating back to 1946. There were some older ones that weren't really productive, so they've been replanted. But yeah, it's a historic site, and it's an exciting time for Radio Coteau. We're transitioning to more of an estate-based property. We will continue with some of our top single vineyard sites, but as time moves on, the estate is a focus for us, and it's a great old place that has some new vines and some old vines and some old structures and a lot of history, and it's a great project, and it is a lifetime project, and we're really just passing time here. There's been a lot of things that have come in the past, and we're looking towards the future as well.
You're just blowing in the wind here on the property, huh, with everyone else that's been here over the decades.
Precisely.
Talking with you makes me think of the term still rivers run deep. You're so calm on the exterior, but there must be a lot going on inside.
Yeah, no, it's important to be calm, and wine is a calming beverage, but it's also, there's a lot of work that goes into making a fine bottle of wine, but slow and steady. So.
Well, again, I know this is a very busy time, and regardless of you being calm right now, I know there's a lot of work to do yet, so I certainly appreciate you taking the time out to talk with me.
Well, thanks for coming out. I really appreciate you visiting with us.
It truly is an historic property with about 10 old structures still in use and a treehouse with a potbelly stove and running water. If you enjoy reading in-depth writings on the history of vintages, vineyards, cellar notes, visit Eric's website, radiocoteau.com. That's radio, CoteaU.com. He only has two different page tabs, winemaking and vineyards and wines, but it's so prolific, you could spend hours on his website. It was good to spend the morning with Eric Sussman at his winery and on his property. And for those of you who have stuck around, I'm going to add on my interview with the publisher of Wine and Spirits magazine, Joshua Green. We'll talk about some of the wineries and a little more detail on the process and how they choose the top 100. That's next, after this important announcement. Hey, here's a thought for you to consider. If you're enjoying today's podcast, you can join my community on Patreon. And with a small $1, $5, or $10 monthly subscription, you can continue to keep me on the wine road to bring these interesting people to you and more frequently. The time I have to spend on my day job is diminishing as I put the increasing effort into what is basically a hobby that ends up as a radio show and podcast. But people all over the world are downloading it, and I'd love to continue doing the podcast. If you go to patreon.com/onthewineroad, you can learn more and see the rewards I offer, which will get greater as time goes on. That way you can meet more of these winemakers and hear them share their stories, which I believe inspires you to explore and learn more about wine. I really appreciate your consideration. Thank you. That's Patreon, patreon.com/onthewineroad. Now, here's my interview with Wine & Spirits magazine about this year's Top 100 Tasting event that coincides with the release of their special winter issue on October 10th that contains the Top 100 Wineries list, as well as the 100 Best Buys. For listeners of my radio show, you've heard senior editor Luke Sikora the last few years. Luke is transitioning out of that role, which leads me to step up to the editor and publisher of Wine & Spirits, Joshua Green. Well, Josh, welcome to On the Wine Road. Nice to have you here for the first time.
Good to be here, Jeff.
Yeah. You know, I always find the winter issue, which contains the top 100 wineries and the 100 best wines of the year, one of the most interesting issues you release.
Well, it's a lot of tasting and writing that goes into it. We tasted over 15,000 wines to select those 100 wineries and 100 best wines, and it's a huge undertaking for the year, and it's really a huge relief when it's all put together and sent out to people.
Right. And then you immediately start on the next 15,000.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I've been very proud to be a part of that and be one of your tasters. So I see how much you go through, but it's still to wrap your head around 15,000. And you have two locations. You have New York and San Francisco, but it's just hard to imagine that many wines going through your offices.
Logistically, it's a big undertaking because as opposed to a lot of the other services that offer wine recommendations, we only recommend the wines that we've tasted blind in our offices. So processing all that wine, bringing panels together, having the panels either, you know, vet the wine, say either yes, we would recommend this wine as a majority of the panelists, or no, we would not. And then a critic for that particular region would always go and taste those wines. If the critic weren't running the panel himself or herself, would taste the wines that the panel had recommended. So it's a very involved process, and we think it gives us some really interesting results and also helps us discover new things that other people might not be seeing it because Right. It's all blind.
Right, yeah, all blind, and like you say, there's multiple layers of getting to that final. And what is it out of 15,000? Is it like 1,400 that ultimately make the cut for the issue?
Oh, I think that, I mean, normally we recommend anywhere between 20 and 30% of the wines that we taste, but then the issue, you know, when we print an issue, we only include wines that we find to be exceptional for some reason, either qualitatively or because the price is inexpensive for the quality. So we print best buys in the issue, and we print wines that score 90 or better in the issue. And it varies radically from one issue to another as to how many wines we're going to have in an issue, but it's substantial. When we publish an issue, we publish a lot of recommendations in it.
Right. And I've said numerous times that Wine & Spirits magazine, any issue, is a great resource for discovering new wines. But this Top 100 Wineries issue, it really showcases what's being produced and respected in the U.S. and around the globe, and it's fun to read.
Yeah. Well, there are 35 wineries that made it from the U.S., California, Oregon, Washington, and New York State. And then there are 65 wineries from every corner of the world, whether it's South Africa or New Zealand. It really covers a lot of ground. And, you know, we put together this event from the tastings and from the issue, and all these top 100 wineries come and pour at the event. And that's an amazing opportunity for people to get to taste some really, really great wine.
It is. It is fantastic, and I love it. And you certainly taste so many varietals that are unique to us here in California and even New York, like the Caño from Spain, Ribula from Slovenia, Zinomavro from Greece.
Some great Zinomavro from Greece, yeah. There's a lot of wine that people will know. There's some amazing California Cabernets, whether they be from Ridge or from Diamond Creek or from Inglenook. They'll all be there pouring. And then they're, you know, and so those are pretty well-known wines. And then, as you say, Kiryani, I don't know how many people have tasted Kiryani wines, and there's Ina Mavros, but that's an opportunity to taste a really amazing, delicate wine that we're calling it sort of Pinot family or Pinot cousins, because we have wines from Bairata that would be made from Baga, from Vadio, and those are kind of a Pinot cousin, and then Nebbiolo is kind of a Pinot cousin, but we're putting that right after the Pinot cousins, and then Zina Mavro is kind of a Pinot cousin because it has the same kind of delicacy and intensity that you can get out of great Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting, we arrange all the wines by, we create a navigation for people so they can taste wines that are part of the same family of grapes or family of style, and it gives you an opportunity to really find some things that you may not have known about.
And obviously there's a lot of ultra-premium and luxury wines, but there are still a number that are reasonably priced, like Skinner and Green and Red and Ridge, as you mentioned. They have wines that are $30, and Ravenswood has their old vines in for only $18, and you'll find those there as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big mix, and I think it goes everywhere from, I think some of the most expensive wines there would be Penfolds, their Grange, and
yeah,
Vega Sicilia, their Unico, and then you'll find some Muscadet, some Albarinos, and things that are less expensive but really delicious.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Rieslings that are beautiful. So it's a wide range, and some people focus on the bigger, richer reds. Some people focus on the champagnes. Some people focus on the lighter, crisper whites. You know, it's really an opportunity to taste a lot of champagne and drink and eat a lot of oysters if you like.
And he's not kidding. The oysters and sparkling wine are very popular. In addition, they're offering a VIP sparkling kickoff reception the day before, which also includes an early entry into the Top 100 tasting event.
The VIP access, early access, gets people into the event at 5:30, and they get to sort of hobnob with the trade and also with the wineries before it gets really crowded. That's why someone would come at 5:30 now. Then we decided to do a special party the night before, which we're opening up to people if they want to buy a VIP ticket for the event and for the party.
Great.
So it's going to be at 1760 in San Francisco.
Oh, awesome. And the food during the main tasting event is fantastic as well. You get some of the finest San Francisco and North Bay restaurants to offer some delectable bites.
Yeah, there's amazing food that'll be there. We cover our favorite San Francisco restaurants, our 50 favorite San Francisco restaurants every year, and then we invite those people to come and serve at the event. When you think about the kind of food that you get at a wine event, it rarely matches the level of the wines that you are tasting, because, you know, when you have things like Roederer Champagne and some really great wines from Vega Sicilia, as I mentioned before, or Ridge or Diamond Creek.
Penfolds. And
Penfolds, yeah. When you have these wines, and if you have some really amazing restaurants there, then it's something that adds a lot to the event.
Yeah. And it's not just about self-indulgence. The Top 100 event benefits the San Francisco Baykeepers, supporting initiatives to fight water pollution.
Exactly. And so I think that for anyone who drinks wine and anyone who knows about all of the water issues that the industry faces, it's a really important cause to consider the watershed around San Francisco, because basically a lot of the wineries are in that watershed. You know, up in Sonoma and Napa, and the Napa watershed feeds right into the bay. So Baykeeper really is an important part of maintaining the quality of the water in that whole region. And we like to support them and support their efforts in keeping the water clean, and it just feeds back into the wines that people are drinking from the area.
Sure.
So
yeah, that does emphasize the importance of the work they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's becoming more and more crucial. I mean, there's a lot of competition for water resources right now, and it'll only get stiffer as time goes on.
And what surprises me is the ticket price, because of all that you get at this one event, it's only $125, and you've maintained that price for a little while now. And I mean, I go to events up here in Sonoma and Napa and around the area that are easily $125, but the extreme amount of wines you get is just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a plan, if you have a tasting plan, you can taste some astonishing things in your hours there. And even if you don't, all of it's pretty damn great. So even just by serendipity, you can discover things bouncing from one table to another.
Right.
So it is a really good deal.
Once you get in there, your eyes are just big, and it's like you're like an adult in a candy store.
That's what we like it to be. Yeah, absolutely.
And for those who have been going the last few years, it's kind of interesting that this year you have, I think, understand, like 30% new wineries attending than you have in the past, like a fairly major turnover.
Well, a lot of the old standards that have been with us virtually every year, we publish a list in our buying guide with the people who we call the premier crew, the people who have been, who received 10 or more top 100 awards.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of those people are going to be there. But then there are a bunch of new people who've never been there before or who haven't been there in many years, like Fratelli Alessandria from Piemonte. Actually, there are a few producers from Verduna, like Alessandria, and then Berlotto is also from Verduna. They've never been at the event before.
Mm.
I don't believe the Chapalu has been at the event before. Corison is the first time at the event.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're making amazing wines.
You have her wine on the cover.
Yeah, yeah. Really loved that wine. And other people like Scarly from Carso in Friuli, they've never been there before. Tapiz from Argentina. I mean, just going down the list, there are lots of people who are newcomers to the top 100, plus, you know, people who consistently make great wines, like Zinfandrecht and Lioko, and I guess Fowry, I think, is a newcomer as well.
Yeah. Well, Josh, once again, I'm looking forward to it, and I think any of our listeners that have a penchant for trying some new wines and extravagant wines, don't miss out on the Top 100 event coming up on October 10th.
Yeah, come discover something new. You'll have a blast. It's great to talk to you, Jeff.
I know we don't all have $125 laying around for a night, but if you can afford it, the Top 100 Wineries Tasting Event is incomparable. Read all about it at wineandspiritsmagazine.com, all spelled out. The winner issue doesn't hit the newsstands until the day of the event, Tuesday, October 10th, but you can find a list of the attending wineries on their website, so you can at least begin to make a tasting plan if you choose to go. The magazine will be available as you walk in, so you can take a moment and read about the wineries to firm up your tasting plan. Because with 100 wineries attending, it helps to have a plan. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for listening to On the Wine Road podcast.